At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
You done fell right down that rabbit hole, so reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on a show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder, mayhem, tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you're by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right. Hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Paul, and their dog Ninja,
and sometimes their cat Freddy, but never the ferrets.
Hey Hillbillies, it's Jerry. As most of you know, it has not been a very good year for me health-wise. Tracy and I are trying to raise some quick capital for a personal project. Now, this project has nothing to do with the podcast, but it will make our lives much easier. We will be able to share many more details with you around Christmas time. Now, in order to make this happen, we have a great deal for you guys. For a one-time fee of just $100, we are giving you a Hillbilly Horror Stories t-shirt, a personalized Hillbilly Horror Stories book, a 15-minute video call from myself and Tracy, or a video call from Santa to your kids, because I've got a really good Santa suit. And last but not least, this is the biggie, lifetime Patreon membership at the highest level. So what exactly do you get for your membership? Well, you're going to immediately get over 1,670 bonus shorts. That's right, 1,670. You're also going to get over 140 full-length bonus episodes. You're going to get every Hillbilly Horror Stories episode that comes out ad-free. And then every month thereafter, you're going to get 24 short bonuses and 2 full-length bonuses per month, along with all the ad-free episodes. What would you normally pay for that? The Patreon alone, at that level, cost $180 per year. You're going to get it for a one-time fee of just $100. Plus, you're going to get the shirt, plus the book, plus the video call. And we're also going to include free shipping. If you want to take advantage of this offer, and trust me, it will make a great Christmas gift for a listener, just go to hillbillyhorrorstories.com to take advantage of the deal. It's only going to be available until December 31st. We did something similar to this 4 years ago, and the people who bought the lifetime membership have already gotten almost $800 worth of Patreon episodes for the $50 that they paid back then. We love you guys, and we can't wait to share this information with you. Hey guys, welcome to episode 381 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy. Yay! No, sorry, go ahead.
So Tracy, we have a fun story lined up for you today. Actually, several stories. Obviously, we want to start by thanking all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Thanks to all you men, women, and service animals for everything you do for us on a regular basis.
We always said every week, we still pray for you guys and want to thank you again for watching over us and keeping us safe at night and all during the day, especially. I know you guys had a lot to deal with recently, it seems like, more than normal. But, you know, we appreciate you all so much. And I hope you guys get to come home for the holidays, some of you, and be with your family. But just know that all of us out here love you.
Absolutely. Tracy, it's been a day where I personally have talked to two different people that are dealing with struggles.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I just hate that anybody has to deal with that. But I am glad that people take us up on our offer, even though one of the people kept apologizing for bothering me, as they put it. It's not bothering me. It's not bothering you.
Not at all.
That's what we ask people to do. And when you take us up on it, we're happy that you take us up on it.
We sure are, guys. We are here for you guys any time of day or night. Just remember that there's somebody to talk to. It doesn't matter. You're not a bother. We want you to talk to us or anybody. You know, our group is so wonderful, and we're so blessed and proud of that group. We can't even tell you. And there's always somebody day or night on there that can help you, will listen, offer advice, or anything you guys, you know, need. So just, you know, give us a shout, and you'll be surprised at how many people will respond and are there for you to listen, for sure. Like I said, you can call me or Jerry, and there's also the crisis hotline at 988, and you can still text the 741-741, but just remember, we're here for you guys, okay? You don't have to be alone.
Absolutely. Tracy, we got a fun episode tonight. We've got a special guest, George Lunsford, is on tonight.
Oh, cool.
And timing sometimes can be a little bit off. For example, I didn't find out until after George was on that he is actually from and in Asheville, North Carolina.
I know, right?
And we just did the stories last week of Haunted Asheville. If I'd have realized that, I would have had him on a week earlier and been on that particular episode.
I know, but how weird is that? That's so funny.
George is super fun. Mm-hmm. We probably talked for an hour last night that was off, you know, the recording. So, yeah, he's super fun. I can't wait to get him back on. And he's an ex-Navy, so.
Oh, thank you for your service, sir. Yes, sir.
All right, Tracy, tonight we have a collection of crazy ghost stories. That's all I'm going to say. One of them's not even a ghost story, so I can't even say that. One of them's a time slip story.
It's kind of what?
A time slip story.
Oh, I like those the best. They're so fun.
So this should be fun. About a month or so ago, we did an episode on haunted aircraft stories.
Mm-hmm.
And then we actually did some of those stories at CryptidCon, and people really liked it. So I thought, you know what? Let me go dig up at least one more. Because I had some that I chose not to do on the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, let me go back to them. And I know there's another one that I at least want to do.
Have we mentioned CryptidCon since?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we have? Okay. It seems like so long ago already.
I know. It's only been a couple of weeks, but it does seem like it's been a long time. All right. So this story took place in the summer of 1973. Now, I want to say, and I'll get to a little more to this as we get into the story, but there's a very famous haunting on an airline that we've covered before, a whole episode devoted to it. This story wasn't part of it, though, but it is involved in the same thing.
Okay.
So
it has a connection.
It definitely has a connection. And, but somehow or another, I didn't see it when we did the full episode on this. So I know I'm babbling, but I just wanted to kind of say there's going to be a connection at the end to a previous episode that we did. All right, so summer of 1973, there was a flight attendant by the name of Enid Grigg. Now, she worked for Eastern Airlines back when they were still around. She had been on an extremely busy shift. I don't know how some of these flight attendants do it.
I don't know how they even know what day it is. You know what I'm saying?
She had flown to Portland, Oregon, and then from Portland to Seattle, from Seattle to Omaha, Nebraska, and then from Omaha to St. Louis, Missouri, and then off to Atlanta on the last leg of that flight.
That's crazy.
She felt like crap.
Oh, I'm sure she did.
Well, no, she's had a stomach bug or something.
Oh, so like she literally felt like crap. You mean she was just exhausted?
No, so as she got on that last flight, she was like, man, I'm sick to my stomach. I just don't feel good. So she asked the senior flight attendant if she could go lay down in the galley just for a little bit to kind of get away, you know? And she was like, yeah, I mean, you know what? This is a less busy flight. Just go down there and take a nap, and I'll come get you if I need you. So Enid goes down to the galley, and she lays down. She was lying there for a little while, but she wasn't exactly sure if she had fell asleep or not. Mm-hmm. Okay. Suddenly, she becomes aware that something just doesn't seem right. You know that feeling you get when you think somebody's staring at you or, you know, gawking at you or something?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what she said she felt like. Now, she knew she was all alone in the galley, but she couldn't help but to feel like someone was in there with her. That's when she saw a pilot standing there. She was like, great. I'm down here sleeping. I'm not supposed to be doing this. And I got the pilot standing there catching me napping.
Wait, I forget. Where's the galley?
In this case, it was below. It was a bigger plane, so it was...
it's below the plane?
Not below the plane.
I mean, like in the plane, but below the right. All the seats where the right. Luggage and stuff right. Is? Oh my God, I'd be so scared.
And a lot of times that's where they have the cooking and stuff like that's done on these flights that serve food.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Where else are they going to do it?
I don't know. I thought they just stuck in the microwave back there.
No.
I'll be daggone. I did not know
they actually
that.
Have ovens.
Stop. Why would you have an oven
See,
on a plane?
That shows how poor we are, that we don't ever get to fly.
Well, that must be first class crap.
We'll have our bag of peanuts, please.
Yeah, we only have like Southwest flights, so. So anyway, she's down there and she gets caught by the captain and she's like, you know, this isn't good. But she said there was no communication between the two of them. He just stood there, standing, staring at her.
Maybe he just wanted to see how pretty she was when she slept.
And then he just left. So Enid is scared for her job now. Because obviously, it would have been probably a lot more strict back in the 70s if you're sleeping on the job to just get rid of people.
Well, yeah, but I would think they would consider how much she had flown that day or whatever. I mean...
Maybe so.
I'd rather have somebody that's taken a little nap and be refreshed and somebody pour the coffee on her head.
So she goes to another flight attendant by the name of Linda. And she asked if she had seen that pilot down there. And Linda was like, there isn't a pilot down here. It's just me and you. Enid was frustrated and a little bit confused. And she blurted out, yes, there was. I saw him. So Enid was like, you know what? I'm just going to go right to the pilot and I'm going to explain my situation, apologize. And she's probably going to throw her supervisor under the bus too, who told her to go down there and take a nap.
Oh, man, that's not cool.
Anyway, so she walks right into the cockpit and she asks the pilots. And she's like, hey, were you guys downstairs? And they all said no. So Enid is like, did I imagine this? No, surely I didn't.
I mean, I would think before I'd open my mouth and get both of them in trouble.
So she said that there weren't any other pilots on the plane, and she didn't recognize
mm-hmm.
any of these as the one
that was
that
standing
she saw
her.
Downstairs. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, she paid so much attention to him that she noticed that the uniform looked like it was brand new. The stripes on it were a bright yellow. But she said it was very real, and she knows it wasn't a dream. But she doesn't believe in ghosts, so that couldn't be the case, as far as she said. And she knows what she saw. Now, other people around this same time on other Eastern Airline flights had seen something very similar. The others had also seen apparitions of pilots. Now, Neil Holland... He was a former Eastern Airlines pilot, and he said that there were several unusual events reported on that particular plane that Enid was on that night. Not just in the galley, but also in the main cabin as well. Now, most of these reports, I told you there were sightings roughly the same time at other planes as well. Most of them had one thing in common. The eyewitnesses recognized the pilots. And that's right, I said pilots. They were Captain Bob Loft and Flight Engineer Don Repo. Now, these men had died on Eastern Flight 401 that crashed in the Everglades. And that's the story that we did the full episode on.
No way. Oh.
Like I said, we did an entire episode on the crash and the haunting, but we didn't have the story, so I wanted to add that one to there.
Yeah.
Now, just a refresher as to what the problems were on that flight, the plane crashed in the Everglades, and those two pilots were killed. But what we found out was they recycled some of the parts on that plane and used them on other planes.
Oh.
So anything that was able to still be used, if they needed that part on another plane,
they would place it on there.
They would replace it. And the planes that had the replacement parts
were the ones
that had the sightings.
Isn't that something? That's kind of creepy.
Yeah. It's a really cool, it's the best of the best when it comes to haunted aircraft stories.
Oh, man.
So, but go back and listen to that one. Maybe I'll put that one up for this Friday, coming up for the classic episode.
Okay.
All right, Tracy, are you ready for the next story?
Yeah.
You said you like time slips.
I be slipping in time all the time. One day I don't even know where I was.
That's not time slips. That's just
reality.
Old age. So it's been a while since we did a time slip story. We actually did a whole episode of them at one point, and I don't think we've went back and done another full episode, or I don't even know if we've even covered another story like we're going to cover tonight. This story goes back in the 1950s, 1956 to be exact. And the story came from Andrew Evans. It was told several times by his grandparents. They were the ones involved. This was over in the UK several decades ago. His grandparents were newlyweds, right? They traveled to Devon for their honeymoon. They had visited Devon several times, so they knew the area, you know, not backwards and forwards. But pretty well, yeah. One of the afternoons that they were there on their honeymoon, they decided to take a walk along this little nice little forest path. About a half hour into their walk, they came across this charming antique tea room.
Oh, that sounds nice.
They had never seen anything like this place, so they were like, you know what, let's step in. His grandmother had a tea cake, and his grandpa had a scone, and they also shared a pot of tea that they said was so good that they actually inquired about what brand it was so they could buy some when they got back home.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that was so fascinating about this tea room was its charming old world feel. The waitresses were dressed in uniforms that looked like it was from another era. They were crisp. They said the customer service was just like second to none.
Nice.
It was just way different than they mm-hmm. were accustomed to. So after paying for their meal and expressing how much they loved the place, Andrew's grandparents left and continued down the path. A week or so later, they decided to go back to Devon, and they were excited to go to the tea room again. They followed the exact same path, meticulously retracing every step from the week before when they were there. They got to where the tea room should have been. But they were shocked to see basically a wall that was formed by these very dense row of mature trees.
You're kidding.
There was no trace of the tea room whatsoever.
So all three of them didn't see the tea room?
There was only two of them. They were grandparents.
Oh, I thought maybe. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, they wouldn't have brought them on their honeymoon.
No, I guess that's right. Wow, okay, go ahead.
Too much bumping and grinding.
Ooh, great grandma. Mm.
So they were confused, but they assumed, you know what, we had to have just went the wrong way, whatever. But they
right.
were like, but at the same time, they're like, this was just last week, and it's not exactly a hard, you got a path there. It's not exactly, you know, hard to figure it out. So they just keep walking, and eventually they cross paths with this elderly woman walking her dog. They asked her about the tea room. And she explained that she'd lived there their whole life and there was no tea room there. So Andrew's grandparents started to wonder, what the hell's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
They again swore to the woman that they had just visited this tea room a week earlier. Now, the woman seemed equally confused. She said the only tea room that she remembered had closed decades ago, way before they were even born.
Damn.
Keep in mind, this is an elderly lady. She said that she herself had visited that tea room as a child. Sandra's grandparents described the tea room with every detail that they could possibly remember. And upon hearing the description, she admitted that it did sound like the tea room that she remembered as a child.
Oh my gosh. How crazy is that?
The only thing that I had a question about on that one was, like, we did a time story on my other podcast and it happened in 1979. And in that one, they were at a hotel and they were amazed at how cheap the hotel room was.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was way cheaper than any other hotel. So because it was back in time where it would have been cheaper.
Oh.
My question here would be, when they went and paid, was there a difference in money or... And I did find out, I went back and did some more research and I found some more about the story that grandparents said that the money that they were, a lot of them, that they were given back in change was not money that was used anymore. And it was like, you know, shillings or something like that was no longer used in society at that time.
Oh my
but
gosh.
They thought maybe it was just a mistake that they gave it to them. But there was some money given to them that was
so
a different type of currency.
But they don't still, like, they, like, when do they figure that out? Like, when the lady says something?
Oh, I guess they probably, no, I guess they probably knew it then. Do you know, it's just like when we were in Mexico and then we got some pesos and stuff that we just brought home, you know, we didn't think nothing of it.
Yeah, but I know this sounds stupid, but is it like the money they said they received, which was different, did they have that on their actual body?
Oh, I'm sure they did.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, the money still existed. It didn't disappear, I don't guess.
Dang, that is wild.
Yeah, it's a crazy story.
How fun, though, is that to get to experience that, even though you feel like you're half crazy after you did it, but...
Yeah, and Andrew said that his grandparents told that story over and over, and all through their years, it never changed.
Well, that's something that'll stick with you, and it's definitely worth telling over and over, I think.
Yeah, we probably need to do another episode on
that. Yeah, that's really cool. I like that.
All right, let's do a story about a haunted restaurant in Toronto, Canada.
Canada.
You're so predictable.
I know it. Get out of my head.
Whitney and Mark Freeman, they buy this restaurant.
They buy this restaurant, you see.
As soon as they purchased this place, strange things started happening. First of all, the usually well-behaved dog that they had, German Shepherd, he, like, investigated the entire place when they brought him in. He went up and down the dining room. He went behind the bar. He went into the kitchen area as if he was looking for something. He then suddenly stopped at table 13 and started to bark uncontrollably.
It sounds like he was looking for food and drink.
It was as if he was barking at an invisible guest. Now, this building had been constructed in 1913. This was in the 80s.
Oh, okay.
This building was constructed in 1913, so it was old, but it wasn't like 1700s old.
Right.
There had already been talks of ghosts in that building before, way before they purchased the restaurant, so nothing new. It was originally built as a private residence. When they bought it, they had the whole building rewired. And as soon as that was done, many of the light fixtures were completely reversed. Like they would flip on this light switch and a different light would come on.
Oh,
back
my
and
goodness.
They call the electrician out because they're thinking he did shoddy work. And when he came out, he actually showed them that, no, look at it. Everything is exactly to where it should be. This wire leads to this switch and leads to that light. And he had no idea why one switch would turn on a different light when everything was wired correctly.
Yeah.
The Freemans lived in the apartment that was right above the restaurant. There was a bedroom, a small office, a living room, and of course, a door to the attic.
I don't like attics. Just to let you know.
You just know that there's going to be something going on with that attic door in the story, just for the fact that I mentioned it.
Yeah.
So one day, Mark noticed that it was open. Now, this was especially odd because the door had a deadbolt on it that they always kept locked. So Mark thought this was weird, but figured, you know what, it's some kind of oversight. Maybe we just, you know, left it unlocked or something and thought we locked it, or maybe, you know, his wife had left it unlocked, whatever the deal was. He shut it and he locked the door, only to have it swing open as soon as he turned his back. Like, literally, instantly locks it, turns around, and it swings open.
Okay, so it wasn't like our attic door then?
No, this was a door that would open up and then have stairs going
okay,
up.
Okay, so different. Oh, my gosh.
So, it you know.
Maybe he thought it was a breeze, but I guess a breeze couldn't lock it.
No, typically breezes don't lock deadbolts. Eventually, the couple decided that they needed a vacation, but the restaurant was actually doing really well. It was extremely busy, so they decided to take separate trips, which sounds awesome.
Oh. Well, that was mean.
On Whitney's last night away, Mark was walking downstairs to the basement. That's when he decided to give the ghosts a little bit of a little piece of his mind, little words of advice, we'll say. Mm-hmm. He told them that he was going to be leaving for a few days, and while he was gone, he didn't want Whitney to be disturbed.
Mm.
He finished with a very stern, "Is that understood?"
Ooh.
As soon as he said that, all of the basement lights came on, which he took as a sign of agreement.
That he did understand.
But maybe not, because one night while Mark was away, Whitney was awoken from a deep sleep by someone clearly calling her name. It was a woman's voice, and her presence in the bedroom was so powerful, it sent chills down Whitney's spine. A few nights later, Whitney was again awoken by the clanking sound of her pet rabbit's water bottle. If you've ever had a hamster or a rabbit or ferrets or something, you know that sound.
Aw, I miss Snoop. Oh, look what I said.
I know.
Oh, my gosh. Aw, I miss him too, though. Mom and Noodle, I miss you too, peoples. My little buddies.
She kept the cage in her bedroom. And the bottle was, of course, attached to some metal bars in the cage, so it always made a racket anytime the rabbit would drink out of it.
Mm-hmm.
She got up to fill up the water bottle, because that's normally what she'd do. When she would hear that,
the
water bottle was empty. Mm-hmm. She'd get up and fill the water bottle up. So she gets up to go fill the water bottle up, and it dawns on her that her rabbit is actually staying with a family member for a few days.
What?
So the rabbit
wasn't even there.
The cage and the water bottle are all gone at this point. And now she starts wondering if the rabbit had always been the one rattling the bottle.
Yep, something to think about.
In 1986, the Freemans sold the restaurant to Nikki Bainbridge. She moved in with her children, and she renamed it the Murray House. I don't know why she renamed it, but she did. The ghost never appeared to the Freemans, but Nikki would actually see the spirit of a woman that she thinks was in her 70s. She would wear old-fashioned clothing and had a very long white apron over a high-collar blue dress. Nikki would sometimes come face-to-face with this woman before the woman would vanish through a wall.
Oh, so they didn't get to talk, be cordial to each other?
Apparently not. Now, this was not the only ghost in the house. One night, as Nikki was sleeping, her bedroom was in the attic, by the way.
No.
Yeah. So she's sleeping in her bedroom.
How could she sleep up there? Isn't it hot?
I mean, probably not. You can send air up there.
Oh.
If you need to.
Go ahead. Sorry.
She's sleeping. She was awoken by the sound of another person breathing deeply. She quickly turns on the light, and she rolls over to find there's a person lying in the bed beside her with his or her back facing her, so she couldn't tell.
Oh, man.
The person slowly faded away after she turned the light on, as well as the indention in the bed.
Oh, my gosh.
On another night, just as she was falling asleep, someone whispered her name in her ear. She suddenly had a strange feeling that her family was in danger. She felt like maybe the voice was trying to warn her of something. So she ran down to the second floor to check on her kids. They're both in the room. Nothing major. Everything looked fine. She runs down to the first floor. On that floor, she found a lit candle that was lying on its side on a wooden windowsill. It looked like it had just been lit and then tipped over shortly before she got there. She had not lit any candles, and she definitely didn't put one on the windowsill. Had she not heard that voice in her head, she wouldn't have gone to check, and her and her children might have actually been stuck in a burning house.
Man.
She felt that there was one ghost that was trying to harm her, the one with the candle, and another that was trying to warn her, the one that whispered to her. She was unaware at the time that the entire town of Port Perry, where this actually took place, had a history of successive fires which repeatedly burned down most of the downtown area.
Oh my gosh.
So.
Why?
I don't know.
What would cause all that?
I don't know. I mean, maybe there was a spirit that just wasn't happy that's like to start fires, such as the one in that house.
The ninja fart, or was that you?
That is not ninja.
You farted.
That is not ninja.
Whoops. Lily. Did Lily fart?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, ninja. I was trying to blame it on you, buddy. Jeez, yeah. Lily.
Yeah, I smelt it while ago.
Ugh.
So.
Good thing there's not smell-o radio. What? I don't even know what. That's pretty interesting. Isn't that weird how like fires start sometimes in the same places? I mean,
yeah, some places just seem to be plagued by fires.
I know, that's terrible. Well, so. I'm glad she got woken up.
Me too.
That would have been a bummer.
All right, Tracy, we're going to take a quick sponsor break, and then we're going to be back, and we'll hear from George Lunsford, and then we'll hear our Patreons and stuff that we didn't do last week, and then we'll listen to George.
Sounds good.
All right, Tracy, the only thing we've got really to bring up at this moment is the fact that we've still got the cruise.
Yeah.
You've got plenty of time to jump on board. See what I did there?
I did see what you did there.
And I saw that was a lip smack. I'm leaving it in. So we've got the cruise. It leaves out September. You've got to July to get it paid for.
Mm-hmm.
You could, you know, set up payment arrangements. You can get all the information on our website, hillbillyhorrorstories.com. I did want to remind people that the payment arrangements are kind of how you want to set them up. Like if you want to pay, I think it's $100 down is what you have to pay for the deposit. But you could pay that $100 deposit and never make another payment until July when it's time and just pay it all at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can throw $50 here or $100 there. You could pay it off when your taxes come in if you get tax returns. You can do it any number of way. So you're not stuck with like, oh, it's $180 a month or something. It's not like that. You set up what you want to pay. Now, they will break it down for you and say, if you want to start in January and make 5 payments or what is July, 7 months, if you want to make 7 equal payments, it would be this amount. But you're not obligated for that.
Right.
And keep in mind, if something happens before the end, before July's cutoff date, if you decide that you can't go or something comes up or you just decide maybe financially it's not a good time for you, you get every bit of that money back.
That's true.
So you don't have anything to lose. Just think of it as a little savings account if you have to.
There you go.
So, all right. Go ahead with the what we got on Patreons and stuff, Tracy.
Okie doke. Our iTunes, we have Mojo Lobster and Kay Cummins. Thank you guys for your awesome reviews. We please ask, and I don't want to beg, but if you guys could leave some reviews, that really helps us and pushes up the ladder so people can see us a lot faster. So it really does help us.
Let me tell you, share something with you real quick, because I've got actual numbers that back this up. A couple of weeks ago, we had like 6 or 7 reviews, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Our total listens for that week were about 60,000 listens. This past week, we only had 2 reviews. Actually, 2 reviews in the past 2 weeks. And our total number of listens was like 39,000. Our total number of listens were about 20,000 per week difference just because we got less reviews.
Hmm.
That actually shows why podcasters are always asking for reviews.
Oh, got ya.
So okay. The more you see, the more you get thrown out there, the more your name pops up in searches. Like, for example, if somebody said, hey, I like paranormal, I'm going to put paranormal in my podcast search. If we've had a bunch of reviews that week, we'll be in the top 3 or 4. So they'll see that and they're more apt to pick on one of ours. If we don't have a lot of reviews, we might be 35th, 37th, and they might not even ever make it down there to see our name.
Mm-hmm.
That's how that works.
Oh.
So it's all about when they do a search for paranormal or Bigfoot or UFOs, how far are we up on that list?
Oh.
That's based on reviews.
I guess I will beg. Please.
Yes, please. Please,
but we appreciate you guys. You do take your time out to do that, and we do appreciate it.
Yeah, so let's do this. This week, let's jump back on anybody who leaves us a review this week. We will draw for a t-shirt to send out to you next week.
Sounds good.
Yeah, just we'll send you a t-shirt. Once you win, we'll send you a message. And do us a favor, though, please. When you leave a review, at least put your name in there, you know. Carrie, John, whatever. It doesn't have to be your last name, just so we'll know, so we can say, hey, John, who left this review, you win. Mm-hmm. And then you can contact us and we'll send you out a t-shirt.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead now. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're fine. You guys are really awesome, really, truly, about doing that. I know you get busy and holidays are here, so everything's a little crazy. But, you know, just if you think and get the time to do it, that would be wonderful. So our Patreons are Stephen Carter, Karen Ladd, Julie Ott, Eddie, Chris Henman, Christine, Dean, and John Cheney. Thank you guys so much. We are so grateful for you all. We appreciate that you do that. I know times are a little hard for everybody right now, but, you know, that means the world to us that you can do that. So, thank you. We love y'all.
One last thing before we listen to George Lunsford. You probably heard the little commercial at the beginning of the episode, but Tracy and I have started another Lifetime Patreon pledge drive, we'll call it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically go to our website if you're interested. For $100 one-time pledge, you get lifetime membership to Patreon at the $15 level.
Mm-hmm.
That's $180 a year that you're going to get for a one-time $100 fee. And the last time we did this was 4 years ago, and it was $50, but we only offered the lifetime pledge back then for $50. But we've got people now 4 years later that they've had almost $800 worth of Patreon that they paid $50 for.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really good deal. You're going to get 24 short episodes a month, brand new, and 2 full-length episodes, plus every one of our regular episodes, 6 episodes that we do a week, ad-free. So you can be completely through with ads. This will last you as long as we're doing the show, and we don't plan on quitting anytime soon. You also get access to everything that's in the backlog there immediately. That's like over 40-some full-time bonus or full bonus episodes, 1,670-some-odd shorts, all right there for you. So, I mean, you get all that as soon as you sign up, instantly. But we're also giving you a shirt, t-shirt. We're also giving you a book, a personalized book, so you just tell us how you want it filled out. And we're also giving you a 15-minute video call that you could either get me and Tracy, if you'd want that, to talk with about whatever. I don't know, if you want to talk baseball, we'll talk baseball. But you can also get a video call from Santa to one of your kids or all of your kids, if you'd rather do that, because I've got a pretty cool Santa suit and I usually do Santa calls to friends and family members. So that's what we got. If you're interested in one-time fee, $100, getting all that, it'd make a perfect Christmas gift for somebody who's a listener that doesn't have Patreon already, or if they've already got Patreon, you can go unsign up for it. What is it called? Not unsign up, but you can go cancel your membership and use this one instead and save you some money. But go to hillbillyhorrorstories.com. It's right there on the main page. Click the button and I'll get an email and then I'll get you everything you need to get started.
Yeah.
All right, Tracy, let's listen to George Lunsford. Hey guys, I love bringing you fresh guests, and that's what I've got tonight. Our next guest, I had the privilege to talk to a little bit at CryptidCon, found him absolutely fascinating. He is a cryptozoologist, an investigator and researcher at Bigfoot 911 and Go Dark Paranormal. He's also an author. And more importantly to me, he was a former gunner's mate in the U.S. Navy. George Lunsford, thanks for your service. I appreciate it, brother.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I am very honored by that introduction.
Well, it's one of the few introductions I've had to take a breath in the middle of. So you've got, and I left off half the stuff that you've accomplished. So it speaks volumes as to your work ethic, sir.
Well, I'm what they always call a jack of all trades and master of none. That's for sure.
There's nothing wrong with that. Trust me.
Well, I appreciate that.
So George, I don't even know where I want to start at with you, because you literally have UFO experiences. You obviously do Bigfoot research, you're a cryptozoologist. And let me ask you something about cryptozoology.
Okay.
I always had a problem with the spelling. It seems like zoologist or zoology in there should have an extra O. Is that just me? Because otherwise it's zoologist.
I felt the same way, but I don't know. I'm a poor old country boy, so I ain't much good at spelling anyway.
So here's what I want to do. I want to talk a little bit about as many things as we can talk about tonight.
Okay.
What would you like to start off with? First of all, let's talk about a couple of your books, and let's get that out there so we know what some of your books are and how people can get them. So tell me what you got here.
Well, here's this one. It's called Legends, Myths, Monsters, and Ghosts, the USA edition. And it features around 8 or more stories for every state in the United States. It also has 5 of the Indian tribes in it. And unlike most people, I call them Indians instead of Native American, because when I spoke to the elders in Cherokee, they referred to themselves as Indians, and out of respect for them, that's how I refer to them.
No, I completely get that.
And it also has my theory of Bigfoot in it. You know, I'm no scientist. I'm just a poor old dumb country boy. But from what I figured out, that's what I put in the book. And it's stories like when I was young, the older people would tell us stories about local things. Like we have one called Helen's Bridge. Hmm. And Helen's Bridge named that way because a woman hung herself from it. And there's a big story that goes with that. And then she supposedly haunts that area up there. And she does. I've seen her. But we won't get into that right now.
But you know what? And I don't normally stop my guests, but I got to on this one. You probably don't know this, but this past Sunday's episode, that was one of the stories we covered, was Helen's Bridge. So we did a whole episode on some haunted stories from Asheville.
Oh, that's where I live. Yeah.
And that was actually one of the stories that I covered. Yeah, we had three young ladies from Nashville come up to our booth and talk about how they loved the show and how we'd covered a couple of stories in the past. And I told them that I would do them a favor and cover a few more. But Helen's Bridge was one of the ones we covered.
Well, now there's different variations of it.
Yeah, we had two variations.
Okay.
We had the obvious one that she, well, I wouldn't say obvious because I guess it's nothing's obvious, but we had the version where she moved there with her baby. There was a fire started in the kitchen. The baby didn't make it. She did. And through grief, she hung herself. And then the other rendition was she was basically having an affair, got pregnant. The guy stiffed her, didn't want to have anything to do with her. And then it went from there. But that's kind of the two versions we had. Is there another version?
Well, and the version that I told in the book, it's her. She has a young child, not a baby, but a child. Say maybe 5 years old, 6 years old. And this is the way I heard it when I was growing up. Is the little girl was upstairs playing in the house. And she was in her cooking. And she left the stuff on the stove. And she went outside to hang some laundry up. And her house was across the bridge and up to the main house. And she'd worked. She was a housekeeper for the main house up here. And they were taken care of because her husband had got killed in the war. So okay. What had happened is she was outside hanging the laundry. And all of a sudden something on the stove boiled over or something and caught the house on fire. And she was trying to get in, and the people run down from the house and was holding her back. And the fire department finally showed up, and the last thing she seen was her daughter's hand on the window, bloody hand on the window. And then the house just collapsed from the fire. And what happened is she was so distraught that they pulled her in up to the main house and got her calmed down. And that night she snuck out of the where she was staying at, and she went down to the bridge, and she was very, very just overwhelmed with sadness. And she was so distraught and everything about what happened. She tied the rope on the bridge and jumped off and hung herself.
Ugh.
I hate that's the story stories. I got growing up.
But see, that's most of those bridge stories. It's always, hey, the woman took her baby up and threw the baby off the bridge. And
yeah.
So I like that this was different than your average bridge story.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually they call them crybaby bridges where they chunk the kids off. A lot of states have those.
Yeah. I'd say most states probably have about 8 of them, depending on how many big cities they've got.
But it's got stories like that. It's got everything from, this book has everything from Bigfoot stories to cryptid creatures to ghosts to UFOs. It even has the Patterson-Gimley story in it. And it's a fun book to read. It's personally, I still like reading it, even though I wrote the stories in it. It's a great one because a lot of the podcasters started using it for source material. They'll get the base story out of my book, and then they'll go look up the bigger details of it. So the guys over at,
you're good.
Telling another podcast, but these guys are so good. I can't help but promote them a little bit. It's called, excuse my language, No BS and Beer Drinking Podcast. Now these guys are fantastic.
I might have to look these guys up then.
And they kind of inspired me to write this one, The Monsters of the World. And I wrote it as a reference guide for anybody that wanted to find out about the cryptid creatures all around the world, but mostly for podcasters. It gives them a ready thing. They pull it up and say, oh, well, let's go do this monster today. And they can read what I got. Then they can get more details on it. But there's 104 cryptid creatures in that book. And I got 26 encounters sent to me from all over the place.
Nice.
Even Bobo has a story in there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to have to snag these two books. You know this because, I mean, literally that's, I've got a ton of books. And most of them is exactly what you just described. How I'll get some of them are a paragraph, two paragraphs. And I'll use that to say, hey, how much more can I find it? And if I find a lot more information, that's how most of our episodes are framed. That's so, like a matter of fact, one of the books was Haunted Asheville. And the author actually went to school at the high school that was now middle school that's next to the cemetery from the old Popper's Field. And did you? And that was one of the stories we covered, but I said on the episode, a lot of it came from him because he actually went to school there and wrote the story on it.
Maybe talking about Josh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
He's a good guy. He really is. He is running all over the place now. I never can figure out where he's at next.
So we got those books. Where can people buy those books?
Amazon.
Of course. It seems like the overwhelming answer these days.
Well, that's the only people my publisher sells to is Amazon. Now, my next book, I'm publishing myself. And it's going to be a little different. Because I'm a little different. But it's going to be what happened while I was doing research, I run through all these different paranormal places. Like I looked at the Doll Island in Mexico. I looked at the Suicide Forest in Japan. You know, the caskets over in, I can't remember where they're at now, but they're in the side of the mountain. The caskets are stuck in the side of the mountain.
Is that in Spain? Is that Madrid? I don't know why I'm thinking that, but I could be wrong.
I'm drawing a blank. I think in Malaysia it may have been.
Maybe.
But different stories like that. When I read them, for some reason, the way my mind works, these stories popped up in my head. And I created these characters in my head, and they just automatically popped in there when I started reading these stories about these different places. So what I decided to do is I'm going to do exactly what my story said. I'm going to use the paranormal places as the settings, but I'm going to use the stories out of my head.
Oh, and nice. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
It's going to be a little different. People's going to be going, something wrong with this boy.
Well, your other books, there's, you know, that first one that you were talking about, that's a pretty thick book. I mean, I wrote a book, and I bet yours is five times the size of the one I wrote.
The first one is 590 pages, and the second one's 300-something pages.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're not your run-of-the-mill, quick, read-them-in-the-bathroom-over-the-weekend type books. These are actually, they've got a lot of stuff in them.
Yeah, but they're all short stories, so the good thing is, you can pick it up, read it, and throw it down, and then come back and read something totally different.
Brother, that's what it takes for me. I've said 1,000 times, you know, you give me a full book other than The Exorcist. There's in Amityville Horror, there's very few that I've read full books. Almost everything I read is short stories.
That's what I'm going to be writing. Most of mine's going to be short stories that I write. Because I don't have enough attention span to do it.
Exactly. That's me. I don't have the attention span. So let's do this. In honor of me getting to finally meet Travis Walton, which was a huge thrill for me.
Okay.
Give me a UFO story.
Okay.
I know you've got them.
I've got two that I experienced.
Okay. That's the ones I'm looking for.
And I got to tell you, it was pretty awesome meeting him. He was a cool guy. He was just as quiet and calm as he could be.
He's very low spoken.
Oh, yeah. But I guess my first UFO experience, I was in the Navy. We were crossing the Atlantic, going over to Europe. I was on a NATO cruise, but our ship was headed over there. I was on watch, and I was on aft lookout. For some reason, I spent a lot of time on aft lookout. I don't know why, but I was on aft lookout. And
what exactly is aft lookout for those of us who don't know?
Well, on aft lookout, we look for anything out of the ordinary to water, or if maybe someone fell overboard, if you're back there to see if anything like that happens, anything comes up behind the ship, you're there to keep an eye on things. And I was back there, and my ship had a stern step, which means it had the helipad, then it stepped down to the stern step where the tie offs and everything for the piers was. Best I can explain it.
I gotcha.
But I was back there, and the forward lookout called me. He said, look on the port side. There's something over there. So I pulled my binoculars up. I'm watching, and there's a light that's over there, and it's just hovering above. It looks like it's either in the water or above the water. You can't really tell. But it seemed to be moving back and forth, but with the ship. You know, it was moving a little bit back and forth like this, and it was moving like it was searching for something. And the first thing that I thought, it was a submarine con tower, because that's what it looked like when I first looked. And I got to realizing it's not touching the water. It's above the water. And back in those days, nobody really talked about this stuff. I mean, that was in the 80s. So nobody really spoke about any of this stuff or anything like that. But I was watching it the whole time. In about 5 minutes, I watched it. And we got within probably 7.5 to 8 miles from it, which is inside the horizon. And radar never picked it up. Sonar never picked it up. Nothing ever picked it up on the ship. It was just the eyes of the forward and the aft lookout and the people on the bridge wings. But this thing lit up. This ridiculously bright light and shot straight up in the air.
Oh, goodness.
And it was just within a blink of an eye, and it was gone. And of course, we're all young kids. We just kind of blew it off and didn't really think anything about it. And that was it. That was it for the first one. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot to it, but you could see a shape. Like I said, it looked like a contour of a submarine. But I've never seen a submarine shoot up in the air like that. So, you know.
Now, if I missed this, I apologize. Did you say this was daytime or nighttime?
Nighttime at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Okay. Okay.
And the second one was actually my wife saw it before I did. We were coming back from Chicago. The airplane had just reached 30,000 feet. The guy announced it over the intercom. And there was a cloud layer below the plane. My wife, she nudged me. She says, "What is that?" I looked out straight across from us on the plane was a silver tube, like a cigar. Had no wings, no tail fin, wasn't disturbing the clouds at all. And it was a little lower than we were, but we could still see, you know, all the way around it. And it was probably, shoot, it wasn't 2 miles away from the plane, 3 miles away from the plane at most. But it looked like it was bigger than the plane. And it was just going along with us. And all of a sudden that thing lit up and poof, it was gone. No noise, no disturbance of the clouds, nothing. It was just gone.
Did anybody else on the plane see it? I mean, did people notice that y'all were maybe making a little bit of a commotion about it and kind of start taking a look? Or
I didn't pay any attention. I was just focused on that. I didn't pay attention to anybody else on the plane. If I looked out the window, they couldn't help but see it. So,
you know, what do you think the reasons are that there seems to primarily be three different types of shapes when it comes to ships? It's usually a disc, a cigar shape, or a triangular shape. Do you think that those are like each ship is from like a different type of aliens or a different, you know, atmosphere or however you want to say it? What do you think the reasons for that is?
I think it could be what they developed. I mean, whoever's driving it developed that type of spacecraft. But I'm a little weird about the triangle ones because we have been developing a triangle shape for a long time for anti-gravity and all that stuff. And it's never really got into the public till here about 5 years ago or so. And those I'm iffy about if that's either ours or if it's somewhere at somebody else's, you know. But yeah, the cigar shape and all that. I have recently received several things from people who have seen cubes.
Oh, that's a new one on me.
Cubes. And I'm like, well, that don't make any sense because there are no aerodynamics to a cube.
No.
So I'm not sure about that one. But there's been several different reports on different things like that, but I can't really put my finger on it. It's got to be from the different societies that it's coming from, because they're going to develop according to what their needs are at the time at wherever they're from. Like we do, we developed our ships and stuff, our ships and our aircraft according to our abilities to create them. I'm saying that's probably what they're doing too.
All right, let's switch gears.
Okay.
Let's go to cryptozoology. Let's go to some of your Bigfoot stuff. Give me your favorite Bigfoot story. Like something that you've been involved with.
Well, I haven't got a lot of Bigfoot stuff yet. I just got in with the group. I saw something. I can't tell you what it was. I was in my work van going through the Nantahala Gorge. Now, as I was coming into the gorge, you got woods on both sides. There's a mountain with a house right below it on the right-hand side, and I was going down, and something caught my eye. When I looked up, I seen this huge dark figure or shadow or something. I don't even know what it was. It was so fast. It went from point A and was out of my sight before I could blink. it was something huge because you could see the bushes moving even after this thing had already gone. And there was no wind. And it was high enough up to where there wouldn't be no car drive. Well, you only got 35 mile an hour speed limit there, so there's no wind off vehicles or nothing. But this thing, it was huge and it moved quickly. And where it was at, there's a path. Now that all the leaves fell off, you can see a path that goes all the way around and goes up and behind into like a V. And you can't see anything after that from the road. So I don't know what it was. I just know it's big. And it grabbed my attention. Unfortunately, I haven't been out much on the Bigfoot hunts. I'm going to be going soon to do a lot of them. So you got to watch around here. Somebody will shoot you.
Oh, I don't doubt. Yeah. Did you experience anything paranormal while you were in the military or anything that you think might have been paranormal?
I've had a lot of paranormal experiences, but not when I was in the military. When I come out of the military, I was in my early 20s. And well, before I was around 16 when I had my first experience. That's when my grandmother passed away. She actually came to me in my room in a spiritual form, sat on my bed and talked to me before she left. And that was probably the most awesome thing. It was just incredible.
The world. Yeah. It's amazing how many types of stories are out there where someone is on their deathbed, you know, maybe sometimes hundreds of miles away. And then they show up to a relative and basically to say bye. And then you realize after the fact that either that's the time they died or they died shortly before that, or, yeah. and you had no way of knowing until after the fact.
That's what happened there. She had passed away that night. And we found out the next day she was dead. And, the reason I knew it wasn't a dream is because I went back into my room after everything. We'd found out everything. I went back into my room. I could still smell her perfume.
That's amazing. I love those kind of stories.
Yeah. And well, see, I died for a short period of time in my early 20s. I had pneumonia and I was dead for like 15 minutes or something like that. And after that, I had a lot of encounters. I had ghosts pop up in my vehicle as I'm driving and come to find out that's where they had their wreck and died.
Oh, wow.
I tell a story and it's so funny. There's a graveyard. You go through a graveyard up here and then you go across a bridge onto the road and come to my house. Well, there's a little grave sits right down real low on the right hand side of the bridge. And there was apparently a middle-aged black man is buried there. And he used to flip me off when I come through.
His spirit.
He would laugh. I could hear him laughing. So I'd look down there and he'd flip me off and keep laughing until I got out of sight. And it happened for several years till I finally went down there and went to the gravesite itself. And then then I'd hear him laughing, but he wouldn't flip me off anymore. But
did you ever get any background on who he was or anything? Or
I never found anything about him. I guess he wanted attention of me to come down there or somebody to come down to his grave. And I did. And he stopped flipping me off. You could still hear him laughing. I didn't see him anymore, but I could hear him laughing when I got to the bridge. And I've had several things like that happen. We had my friend I used to have. He lived in a house. And the only time I've ever been scared of the paranormal. It was the creepiest thing you've ever seen in your life. The house was over 100 years old. And when you got up to the house, you just felt this pressure on you and you felt cold. In the middle of summer, you felt cold. And he took me down to the basement one evening. He had a big, now he got married. He had a big 130 pound Rottweiler. We go down in the basement and we're looking around and somebody had built cages into the granite floor, the granite underneath the house. And the way we figured it and what we best we could come up with is that's where they kept her slaves. The ones that tried to run away or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was just this creepy feeling the whole time. We got to whiz down there looking, and we heard the dog get started whining, and it backed all the way up in the corner. This is a 130-pound Rottweiler. It ain't scared of nothing. And we got to watching her, and she was just, she didn't want to be there. We got to looking over at those cages, and something black, shadow-like, come out of that one of those things and went across the ceiling. And when it did, we went back upstairs. It came upstairs too. And we were there, and this thing came across, it came out of the stairs, and it went all the way across the wall, across the TV and over to the window and stopped between the windows. And you could feel like something was watching you. And it's almost like you're being restricted on your breathing. And when I left, he said he saw eyes. I didn't stick around. I don't do evil stuff. So, but they didn't stay there long. They left soon after that.
Yeah, I don't think I wouldn't last long in a house that I felt uncomfortable in. You know, I spent a long time in a haunted house, and I never really, except for one time, did I ever feel uncomfortable. And that really was just a fluke, I think. I don't think the two were connected. I think that was something completely different. And I think living in the haunted house over that period of time, I was a little more susceptible to seeing things, picking up things. I never really saw anything. Everything was always a feeling or audible. But I kind of feel like that maybe that was something that knew that I could probably pick up on it if it came around. But I don't think it had anything to do with everything else that was going on in the house.
We had one at me and my first wife. We lived in a little trailer over a trailer park. It's up on the side of the mountain over here. And when the kids were born, we started getting some activity around the house. You know, things moving, things not where it's supposed to be, and cold feeling like something walked through you every now and then, just stuff like that, nothing major. And one night, my daughter was crying. She's a little bitty baby. She's not crying. So I got up out of bed, and I went in to go find out what was wrong. If she, you know, had a dirty diaper, or was she was hungry, or whatever. And I walk in, and I hear this noise. It's going, and I thought, that's a woman's voice telling the baby to calm down. I looked, and you could see the blanket like somebody was patting it. And my daughter quit crying. So I was like, okay, well, thank you. And I went back.
You got a free live-in nanny. You don't get no better than that.
Oh, she was wonderful. I named her Bertha because I did some research on that area and found out that they used to be, back in the early 1800s, a family lived there that died of tuberculosis. There was a mother, a father, a 16 to 17-year-old girl, and a 10-year-old little boy, and they all died of tuberculosis there. And the daughter was the one that was in my house. And well, every now and then you could see the mom and dad, you might see like a flash out of the corner of your eye, and that's all you'd ever see of them. Now, the little boy would play tricks on you. You had to watch him because he would walk up and stick and appear long enough in the window at the corner of your eye to where you could see his face. And then when you turn real quick, he'd disappear. And he would move stuff outside on the porch and stuff. He'd never come inside. It's like Bertha said, nope, yuns ain't coming here. This is mine. So, but she was great. She was always watching out for the kids and everything. And she just, I mean, it was wonderful to have her there. When me and my wife divorced and another woman come over, well, Bertha didn't like her. So I was at work, and I get this frantic phone call, and this girl is freaking out. She's just all to pieces. And I said, what is wrong? I had thrown like 10 cents and pennies on the table before I left, just to get them out of my pocket. And Bertha was taking those pennies and she was dropping them off onto the ground. And they would land on her edge. And she would move them, roll them all the way across the floor, stop, turn them 90 degrees and roll them over and drop them heads up. And she made a complete circle out of those 10 pennies. This girl was freaking out. She left. So, but she terrorized her pretty good.
Give me one more good story to close out on, George.
Well, the best one I got is I worked in an explosive factory. And the story was at the explosive factory that the company that used to be there, they dealt with different chemicals and stuff, and they actually made phosphorus. And there was two guys working late one evening, and it was probably around midnight or so, and they was trying to hurry up and get out of there. Well, they went down to clean the phosphorus pit. One guy was already down in there. Another guy had dropped some tools down there for him to clean the pit. Well, you don't use on phosphorus. You have to use non-sparking tools. Most of the time it's wood. So nothing, you don't have to worry about anything sparking off, because if phosphorus goes off, you can't put it out. It has to burn out, or you have to, well, basically it has to burn out because there's nothing else you can put it out with. Well, one guy was in there and he grabbed the wrong tool. And when he went to clean, it sparked off and blew the guy that was on top. It covered him in phosphorus and blew him out of the building. And the guy that was in there, you could hear him screaming as he was burning to death. Well, the guy that had got blown out actually walked down the road about maybe 10 feet. And everywhere he stepped, there was footprints burnt into the pavement to where he collapsed, finally collapsed and burnt and melted. And he was screaming this whole time. Well, the story was that at midnight, every year, you could see them. You could hear them. And I didn't believe it. I was working late one night. Apparently, it was the anniversary of this happening. And you could hear this blood-curdling screaming. I mean, it's unbelievable how much pain these people had to be in. But you could hear it. And I stepped outside. I was an inspector there. And I stepped outside the building and looked up on the hill. And you could see a glow right there where those footprints were burning to the ground. There was footprints really burnt into the pavement up there. But you could see a glow. And then after just a minute, it disappeared. And you didn't hear anything else.
That's wild. Absolutely wild.
That's my life.
But George, tell everybody how they can find you on like any type of social media or websites that you might be on.
Well, I am on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, MeWe, and X. Anybody that wants to talk to me or hear about the books or even hear stories, feel free to contact me. I'm easy to get a hold of, and as you can tell, I like to run my mouth.
And your last name is Lunsford. I kept wanting to put a D in it, and I'm sure I wouldn't be the only one. So I'll just tell people there's no D in Lunsford.
No. Well, there is at the end.
Well, that one doesn't count. I mean, George, it's been a blast, buddy. I can't wait to have you on again because I know you've got way more stories than what you told tonight. I could already tell.
I appreciate that, and I've really enjoyed it. It's been a total pleasure and an honor for me. Thank you very much.
Again, what's the name of the two books that are on Amazon again?
The first one is Legends, Myths, Monsters, and Ghosts, the USA edition. And the other one is Monsters of the World, Reference Guide.
Now, you said the USA edition. Does that mean there's going to be an international edition coming as well? Or are you just leaving the door open?
I'm leaving the door open because I'm not sure yet. I've had a lot of people ask me, but it's harder to get stories from overseas. They don't want to give you their stories up.
I didn't know if it was like History of the World Part 1 that Mel Brooks did, and then finally, you know, 40 years later came out with Part 2, but I didn't know if that was the case or not. As far as I know, I think it came out last year.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm going to find
out. Or at least it was in the works if it didn't come out.
I love Mel Brooks. I grew up with Mel Brooks watching him on TV.
Yeah, Mel Brooks is something else. So,
yes, sir.
Awesome. All right, brother. I appreciate it, and I'll be talking to you soon.
Thank you, sir. I greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, guys, that wraps it up for us this week. Thank you so much. And as usual, we appreciate everything you do for us.
We sure do, guys. We love you, and we are so thankful that you've hung in there with us, and hope you'll continue it. And I hope you all have a blessed week. We love you.